Mary Conlin. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, and Dennis McCormick. Tomorrow on Democracy Now!, we'll talk about British colonialism and Northern Ireland. The King is in Northern Ireland today. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now! Stay safe.
You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 and 107.3 FM. This program has been brought to you today by the Tom Pastilio and Mickey Conlin team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, hosts of the Jazz Loft Summer Music Series in Stony Brook Village. The Tom Pastilio and Mickey Conlin team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate may be reached at tomandmickey.com. We thank them for their support of WUSB Stony Brook.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's just about 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall. Thank you. very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello.
Well, we're living through a bit of history, don't you think?
Unbelievable, isn't it? I'm like, I don't even know. It's surreal.
Well,
it is,
I mean,
totally.
Look, the last time the Mets were in first place in September, it didn't end well.
Are they in first place?
You see, this is why I get so upset when you don't show up to the meetings before the show. Yeah, well, I mean,
that's what those meetings are about.
I don't know if they're first place right at the moment. Gosh, can we start again? This is on tape, right? Oh, damn it.
I think the intro's on, so you'll just want to
abort. Wait, let's talk about something else.
Oh,
the Queen died. Did you hear about that?
Yes.
Wow, that was a bit of a headline.
Yeah, she was at Balmoral
in Scotland.
In Scotland, mm-hmm. Actually, just left Edinburgh today from having lied in state and had the public Yeah, I don't know. She was resting in the city there, and the public
was. I always
had
trouble with the word resting when you've passed away, which is also a weird phrase.
She was positioned there, and there were people proceeding through and paying their respects, and it was lovely. And she flew today to London.
Okay, let's not make it sound scary. She was flown to London, yes, by living people, there's going to be 4 days, four full days of lying in state where people can come and pass by and pay respects. I've only done that once in my life. I'm not talking about funerals. I'm talking about where somebody is lying in state and you go and you pay your respects. Can you guess who that was for?
Well, I don't want to ruin it.
No, I'm asking you to guess, so it's not ruining it.
What?
It only ruins it if you don't answer.
Was it in North Korea?
Yes, it was in North Korea, but okay. That wasn't the question. But
was
yes.
It the dear leader?
It was for Kim Il-sung.
Kim Il-sung.
Yes, because Kim Jong-il was still alive then. And, you know, it wasn't like I had a choice. Well, I mean, I had a choice of going to North Korea. I decided, yeah, okay, this will be weird. And it was. But once you're there, you will pay respects to Kim Il-sung. So big, huge mausoleum-type building. And he, of course, is the focal point. Still there, still in glass, you know, like Lenin's tomb and all that. They're big on that.
He's a great leader.
He is the he's the great leader. Kim Jong Il was the dear leader.
Got it.
And Kim Jong Un is the big leader. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have that wrong? I can't keep track of it all. I'm sorry.
We'll double check. We'll double check that.
Yeah, we'll check it, and we'll release a press release at the end of the show, like we always do.
The process of this has been just unbelievable. It just was. It was a uncertain. She had welcomed the new Prime Minister Liz Truss into office there, and
2 days before on Tuesday, new Prime Minister in England. It was a big week for the United Kingdom.
Absolutely, it's really scary there, and in a lot of ways. I mean, just her commitment to carry out that last act there.
Mm-hmm.
Frail, or if you know, she knew she was falling ill, or I don't know. It just seemed that. Passing along the duties and staying involved, it just was symbolic in so many ways. And I saw that picture of her, and her hands were exposed, and it just seemed like a little off. And then
she usually wears gloves, right?
Yeah, and they were saying she was that was what caught me by surprise. I was wondering if it was deliberate or something, and she may have been having procedures and stuff like that, and it just seemed not as carefully orchestrated and choreographed. So it just struck me as like unsettling, because the night before we had been hearing all of this stuff about like, and this is a couple days after that photo was taken, her...
They only were a couple of days after that photo was taken.
Right, but the night before she died, Wednesday or so, it was just the news of her not feeling well and going directly back to Balmore, and then the next day we heard the news.
It had been going on since June, I think, where she was skipping various functions and things like
yes,
that.
So, yeah.
I mean, you know, 96, it's not hard to imagine. I don't think anybody was really surprised, but
no.
Everybody was still... quite saddened, and I have to say, I got wind of what was starting to happen in the morning of Thursday when the bulletins were that doctors were concerned for her health, and it's interesting watching BBC, watching the way things are reported. There's code in everything, and it's so fascinating. They're so good at it, but by saying things like that doctors are concerned for her health. I think they're getting the word out that something imminent is about to happen or has already happened. And you should look up, we talked about this a few episodes ago, probably about a year ago, about Operation London Bridge, which is what it's called when the Queen was going to die, what would happen. And BBC did all the things they said they were going to do. They announced the bulletin very formally. The announcers dressed in dark suits, the red bar that has bulletins turned dark and still is dark, a number of other things. I understand every radio station in the United Kingdom has a special light that flashes when either a member of the royal family has died or when there's incoming nukes or something really big. You can imagine that at USB? Flashing light just for that purpose and that purpose alone. I don't know how they control it. But I would imagine that light was probably flashing a bit before they announced the news. Reason being, the royal family, all her children and grandchildren were on their way to Scotland. That right there told you something was up. But right after they got there, it's around 6:30 p.m. Like a minute after that is when the announcement happened. I think they were waiting for the children to arrive before making the announcement, because at Buckingham Palace, what they do is they march out and they attach this this framed letter. It's all dark and everything like that when something like this happens, saying the Queen passed away. They had to prepare that. That had to be ready. And the note said that she had died in the afternoon and at 6:30 at night when they announced it. So I don't know. It doesn't really matter when exactly it happened, but I'm fascinated by the way it all unfolds and the choreographing. I'm not even getting into the whole royal family business. Just watching this was so intriguing.
And how I think you're saying how words spread so quickly and in different forms to across formats, like small radio stations up to the big broadcasters, from these formal declarations to all of the sort of diplomatic things that machinations of the Commonwealth and activities, announcements made to different countries, and it all is still ongoing, and it represents a tremendous amount of history and sort of the modern postmodern age, but also its own transformation and change, but of course with a lot of the messages of how shall we say, like the stability and constant that a lot of people regard the royal monarchy and the family as serving in as servants of the public and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was really something watching it all unfold. We looked at what was being broadcast domestically as well. BBC has four channels in the UK, BBC One, BBC Two, Three, and Four. One was the main channel. They were broadcasting all the news. BBC Two did a simulcast, and BBC Three and Four shut down. And they had little notices on the screen saying that they were suspending programming because of a major news event. It's weird. They wouldn't say what the news event was. I guess, you know, maybe it's somehow considered beneath the magnitude of the event to say it. They say tune to BBC One for a major news announcement. Same thing on this awful channel that we have now called BBC America. It used to be a good channel. I remember when the Queen Mother died a number of years ago. They broke into programming, played God Save the Queen, all that. And it was a real BBC-oriented thing. Now they play Star Trek, and I don't know why they play Star Trek. It has nothing to do with England. Yeah, you know, Captain Picard has a British accent, but he's supposed to be French anyway, so that doesn't even make sense. But they like almost every other cable network that exists now that used to have a theme, they don't have that theme anymore. Remember when AMC was American Movie Classics?
All right, yeah.
It's you know, sci-fi used to be science fiction.
BBC
America is not BBC. And of course, they did not break into Star Trek. They did, though. They had a little line on the bottom.
It was like a micro crawl.
Very tiny. And it said, basically, did they tell you to tune to something else? They just said, there is a major news announcement. They wouldn't say what it was. So there's that small link that remains. But for the most part, if you have to, if you want to see BBC in this country, you have to have BBC World News, which fortunately is offered in more places now than when we first started harping about this many years ago. But over in the UK, from what people were telling me, it really was only one program that was being broadcast. And it was basically news, documentaries, all sorts of things like that. And the other independent channels, there's ITV, there's Channel 4, and there's Channel 5, were doing similar things, but I don't believe they were commanded to do that. The BBC is run by the government, and the other channels are licensed by the government, I suppose. But on BBC 3 and 4 and the radio networks, comedy programs were suspended for, I think, about 48 hours or so. It all sounds really kind of Orwellian and dictatorial, but there's also something truly fascinating about it. And you just get the sense, looking at the people, all the people in the streets, and just the reaction, this matters to them. This matters to them, and I think that's why we should respect it. When people have a belief system, maybe you don't understand it, but you damn well better respect it. I learned that in North Korea, and you know, it's a lesson that I think we're all learning on a daily basis in one place or another. Right now, the place is the United Kingdom. And while I can go on for hours about my criticisms of the monarchy and that whole system, this doesn't seem to be the time to do that and get a good audience, because right now it's all about the ceremony. It's all about the paying the respects. And I think, you know, it doesn't cheapen our position in any way to put that on hold and just kind of look at it from their point of view and see just what this woman meant to them. And she meant so much to them. I mean, in power since 1952, you know, most of us were only were aware of this one ruler for our entire lives. And that is something that we can't even conceive of. But over there, it's like stability. And that stability has had the rug pulled out from under it. So it's a little disheartening. She was a very comforting figure, kind of like your grandmother. A very nice person from all accounts. I mean, what she did in Ireland, Northern Ireland and the Republic, may very well have paved the way for lasting peace. Just gestures. You know, a member of the royal family was killed by IRA terrorists, yet she made a gesture to have peace between the sides. And today, I think people really want that to stick. And they're paying respects in the Republic of Ireland, not part of the United Kingdom. Flags are at half-mast for a monarch of a different country. That's unheard of. So those little things, they do matter. And the fact that she's not a politician means that she is not divisive. There isn't a side that voted for her and a side that didn't vote for her. She just was. It was part of the monarchy. And the other thing about the monarchy is that we're all fascinated by it. We might as well just admit it. I mean, every TV program involving kings and queens is based on the British monarchy, and Game of Thrones is pretty damn similar, and it's a link to history. People in England can name all the kings going back to God knows when, and they're fascinated by it too. It doesn't mean that the same values exist now, but it's that link. It's that link to who the people were, and don't get me started on architecture, just so much. But yeah, there's a lot of abuse and waste and horrible things that really should be discussed. But this is a time just to sort of take it all in, I think.
Certainly, I think most would agree that they're taking their taking it in, and a lot of people have different reactions to it. So I think the heavy-handedness or the attempt to kind of keep some of the criticism quiet might be mostly because a lot of people, you know, hold her in such high regard and are hurt. They're mm-hmm. terribly hurt and could be quite offended and uneasy about that whole kind of critique line in the middle of what is a long scheduled and ongoing ceremony.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, it's so crucial in having that kind of figure and the role, whatever it is. Yeah, like you said, the sort of fairy tale aspect, but really it's curating our history. And I think we're looking at a moment when it's so hard to figure out what is our history, who's telling the history of our nation, and what do people understand of it, of our values, and the, I think the monarchy curates and displays that mm-hmm. as leaders and role models and a fascination of the public. So that is something we don't have necessarily in the same ways, because it's, you know, business or the economic mm-hmm. side versus politics, and so on and so forth. This sort of unusual system, it isn't ours, but it's certainly part of the world.
Could have been our system. We decided back in the 1700s, we're not going to do that. We'll try something else. But we'll see in a few hundred years and, you know, compare notes. But Canada, everyone's making this mistake. King Charles now is, probably the first time I've said that, King Charles is the head of state for Canada, I believe, is the official way you say it. He's on the money there, you know, and it's part of the Commonwealth. Now, there are some countries that don't want a king to be their head of state, but they still want to be part of the Commonwealth. It's going to get kind of contentious in the months ahead, I think.
Oh, yeah, as though you can simplify it and be right.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredibly complex, and I'm not glorifying or saying it is, there's a lot to learn from it. And
well, just the proclamations, you know,
these many places have learned to get along, and you could credit her reign, I think, for the current alliances and of course ones that were forged right at the outset of her reign.
Right. I mean, I'm not aware of her, you know, leading the charge and saying, let's vanquish these people or anything like that. I am aware of her being a voice of conciliation and just reaching out to people. I'm sure there are bad things that we can find if we really look for that. But it's the institution of the monarchy in itself that should be questioned, not a 96-year-old woman. And also, if you're going to question the monarchy, you have to question the government too, because they actually are the ones acting and making policy as well, in tangent with the monarchy. It's a weird-ass system, but, you know, just to declare him the king, I mean, he becomes king immediately upon her death.
The entire session was really interesting. That whole process was immediate.
My God, there were so many sessions.
Yeah.
And they have to proclaim it in all these different places, because that's the way things used to be. There wasn't a BBC. There wasn't a way to broadcast to the entire world. You had to go from town to town and spread the news. And that's kind of what they're doing. And I am just blown away watching that.
It really takes on the concept of language and making a declaration. It is so important, and in these venues, yeah, largely ceremonial, but it is not real unless it's said, and that is declared, and those who are part of the United Kingdom will acknowledge that after it has been said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't count the number of different things that we have. I mean, basically, people driving from one place to another, that's being covered on TV as they drive, crowds lining the street, all kinds of ceremonies and speeches. My God, King Charles, when this guy speaks, it's he just has such, how do you say it? He is a very good speaker. Let me put it that way.
Seasoned.
He doesn't get a syllable wrong. His voice fills the room. And much of what he says makes sense too. Those are the big three that we never seem to get here. I was very impressed by that, just by the way he carries himself. But again, he's had his entire life to prepare.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And even, yeah, just delivery and, articulation, just, compassion in what he's saying. It's not just, reading, you know, you get the sense that the words really do, mean something to
him.
But
then, you know, we're watching the parade going by and the commentator is interviewing an 8-year-old kid. And that kid's got just as much of a speaking skill as King Charles. It's just, I don't know what it is, but people are taught to speak better. It's not the accent, not just the accent. It's just the way of presenting your thoughts and just being rather humble in the way you present them, you know?
Indeed, yeah.
No shouting and waving your fist in the air. No chance of, the equivalent of USA that we would have over here. Very refined.
Oh yeah. I would say even just sort of just very quiet and subdued. A very subdued sort of kind, quiet pride in that whole affiliation.
Shall you have your tea now?
Yes.
All right, I'll just put it down over there. So, this has been basically what we've been fascinated with over the past, since it started on Thursday.
Yes, we've been soaking it up with everyone, along with everyone else, learning what we can and taking time to reflect on what it has meant to everyone.
Again, it means so much. It means a lot, and that's
her accomplishments, her legacy. Just going through that and understanding the breadth of accomplishment, it would take you a months to study it, and I don't know. I'm really hopeful that it's a calm transition. I think Charles will play that part. King Charles. Mm-hmm. We'll play that part.
Yeah, you don't just call him Charles. Yeah, King Charles.
King Charles. Right.
Hang on. We have to shut up. Stand up, stand up. It happens every now and then, folks. Sorry about that. It's piped into our system. That was Queen. Queen playing God Save the Queen, which actually it's not called that anymore. Now it's called God Save the King. They renamed their anthem. It's another crazy thing. So, yeah, that was on the end of the album. When I was a kid, I was listening to this. Bohemian Rhapsody was on this album called A Night at the Opera. And Bohemian Rhapsody was what many people thought the last song. And what a song it was. Really revolutionary for its time. But if you kept listening, God Save the Queen came on afterwards. How awesome was that?
Oh, I love that. They did that so much with CDs and secret songs. That's
and the same Queen was in power then, you know? The same Queen was in power during the Beatles. You know, she gave them something. A knighthood, whatever
An honor.
An MRI or something. There's some kind of thing that you get when you're...
A title.
Yeah, it's a title, yeah. John Lennon gave his back because of war and things like that. And there was that episode of Monty Python where the Queen was occasionally tuning in, and whenever the Queen tuned in, God Save the Queen would play and everybody had to stand up. Yep, that's kind of what happened here. So, you touched upon this before about people who objected. And I'm seeing news reports of people who are actually getting arrested for speaking out. And that's wrong. And that's what's going to turn people against this sort of thing quicker than you can imagine. Basically, lawyers, free speech activists are ringing alarm bells after the reports that emerged of police detaining, moving, and in some cases, even arresting protesters at the events marking the death of Queen Elizabeth and the accession of Charles. People have been picked up by police as they shouted against the crown, heckled royals marching by, and carrying anti-monarchist signs, and in one case, a blank sheet of paper. Okay. The police crackdown on such protests has raised questions about freedom of speech during this fraught period for the United Kingdom. And yeah, you know, this, that's not how you handle it. I mean, yeah, you know, if you're going to stand up and shout things in a solemn ceremony, that's not the smartest thing to do in a crowd of tens of thousands of people. And I don't think the cops are going to be the ones that deal with you. But if you make it a policy where if you criticize the monarchy, you get detained, that's bad. That's really bad, and you should know better. And I just hope that's not the norm.
I think there's an understanding that this isn't some new normal thing that's going to occur, and we're at the dawn of that. It is purely something that they could enforce based on whatever they're charging people with, at not an errant, you know, morning on a corner of a busy street during a parade, you know, enticing and inciting and taunting, jeering the royal family as their funeral procession is going by. And that's rude. And there are, you know, I think it was like disturbing the peace or whatever the equivalent law is that wrecking the peace there. I don't know. It's like anything, you know, there are laws for all kinds of stuff. They're enforcing that at that moment there. And I don't know. I don't want to defend it, because there's plenty of critiques and there's valid points all around, but how can we be surprised? I mean, it's brave of them to go out there, stick their necks out and say that.
The things they say are correct, but it's just, you know, I don't know, just a little decorum at a time when obviously so many people are affected by this.
I can't be like totally abhorred and like shocked that's going on at the moment. Like, it's not something to be outraged about. I think it's definitely something to observe, and people have a right to speak their mind at whatever moment. And you just, I guess, you know, I'm trying to think what the mentality is in enforcing it at that moment, because I just laid out why maybe that's going on.
Oh, we know people like that who have to always object to something just because, you know, the spotlight will turn on them and they get to shout some more.
Well, I'm trying to think,
disrupt,
like,
things. And
what would authorities use as an excuse? And it's like, oh yeah, the disorder, the peace and unrest would be people that, as I said earlier, are like hurt and upset. And if they feel they're being, you know, attacked in a moment that is a ceremony and stuff, like, of course, it's not a huge shock. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel for everybody.
It just shouldn't be a policy that if you say something. I mean, you know, these ceremonies are unique, and you have a massive amount of people that pretty much right now are feeling the same thing. So if you were to challenge that or insult that, you would probably put yourself at risk, and not being there is probably better for you than for anybody. And hopefully that is what the cops or law enforcement of any sort is striving to do, rather than punish people for speaking their minds and for saying things that happen to be true.
Think about it another way, though. So much of this is being recorded and shown on television more than ever. In the past, how do we look at that tape now? Are there massive protests at past funerals for royalty? So what do they want? They want to orchestrate this as nicely and, you know, to have, riots in the street next to parts of this whole process would make for bad history. And, you know, they have an interest in how it looks and how it and keeping up appearances. It's the queen, for God's sake. So,
well, I can tell you that if you watch the media, you probably didn't even see this, because, you know, one person shouting, first of all, there's always a guy shouting when there's a march going by, you know, one of those military people shouting commands, which I can never understand. So it probably just sounded like that if you heard anything at all. Again, you know, this is all going to be coming up in the months ahead, not only in the UK, but throughout the world, where people say, okay, have we had enough of this? And, you know, even if and when that does happen, it's still going to be preserved in one form or another, because this is history. This is part of who the British people are. And I don't think they're just going to want to destroy it. I think they're going to want to learn from it and look back on it in some way.
But also redefine what it is in any given future moment.
Yeah, you have to do that. Yeah, you have to. And it has been redefined. I mean, you know, the Queen didn't lob off anyone's head, as far as I'm aware. But that used to be the norm. And I was thinking about that, watching these ceremonies. These are the same rooms that, you know, people like Henry VIII wandered through and did all sorts of horrible things. You can't just forget that or erase that. You have to confront it. And that's, I think, what's going to be happening a lot. But just not right now, because right now it's a 10-day event. Boy, you know, it would be, you know, great if, I don't know if great is the right word, but if everybody got this kind of an honor, you know, because there are so many people who deserve it. And just to see, it's so over the top, you know. It's just, okay, so today we're going to be having the exact same ceremony, except now it's going to be in Northern Ireland, and then we're going to be in the western part of England, and then there's the other ceremony that must be overseen by this particular knight on a horse, and it just dates back many centuries, but it has to be done, and nobody has really seen it for the last 70 years. So for that reason alone, it's fascinating.
An incomparable legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone's looking at their own legacy and to compare is like, how could you even, someone with such a profound, reign over history in the UK.
Now, you know, we talked about how it's evolving and changing. Prince Harry is one example of that. He pretty much left the royal family, moved to the United States, doesn't really want to be a part of any of the official things anymore. But this is obviously an exception, and he has been very visible. And also, it was a big deal seeing him and his brother basically reuniting and not being at each other's throats, which, you know, is never a good thing in a monarchy when brothers are fighting. He was in the military, but he's not going to be allowed to wear his military uniform during the events marking Queen Elizabeth's passing. But they made an exception for, of all people, Prince Andrew. That's the, you know, sex scandal guy. Actually, there was somebody who was arrested for shouting, you know, to him, "You're a disgrace," or something like that. That was enough. Which, you know, again, the person was completely right. But it kind of takes away from the Queen's day to be drawing attention to that jerk.
They think you called him a nasty old pig.
Did he call him that?
Or yeah, something like that.
Well, you know, the shoe fits. So Andrew basically was stripped of his titles back in January. The palace released a statement saying, with the Queen's approval and agreement, the Duke of York's military affiliations and royal patronages have been returned to the Queen. The Duke of York will continue not to undertake any public duties and is defending this case as a private citizen. However, he will be allowed to wear his military outfits as an exception. However, Harry will not, because he is not serving in the royal family. And they're still pissed off about that. So, yeah.
I think you mean they're going to let him wear it because it's a disguise. You know, just blend in.
Everyone's going to know who he is. Everyone's going to know. So, well, yeah.
That's fun.
Uh-huh.
Lots going on. I'm at a loss for words. It's so rapid, all the change, and you just have to take it in, I think, and take a breather.
Well, just witness it. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with just watching the ceremonies. You don't have to judge everything. You don't have to, you know, hold it up on a scale and say, is this right? Is this wrong? It's happening. You're not going to be able to stop it. It's part of history. It's been going on for centuries. Let's learn something from it. Let's enjoy it if we can. And just marvel at it, because it really is weird.
And listen to how other people are handling it. What are their stories about this incredible woman, you know, this queen of so long, like that in and of itself, how people process this whole thing is part of that history. So I don't know. I'm kind of intrigued by it as the days go on here and the funeral takes place.
Mm-hmm. Which will not be taking place until next Monday. So we have another week of this to go. Oh, boy. And, you know, some countries like, what was it, New Zealand, because they're part of the Commonwealth, they're having a bank holiday, which basically is just a holiday for no real reason, on Wednesday, next Wednesday, because that's how long it takes them to get back from the funeral. And they want to have a holiday when they get back. So there's just all these days off, and everything grinds to a halt, which is just kind of incredible. Let's come back here, though. Let's come back to the local area, Stony Brook University. The headline in today's Newsday, Stony Brook stands alone as New York's top public university. Isn't that great? U.S. News and World Report released its latest rankings of the nation's institutions for higher learning yesterday, with Stony Brook University receiving its highest placement in the history of this publication, according to school officials, who were a bit more excited than the publication, obviously.
Wow.
We're number one in the state for public universities and 77th among national universities.
Who's number 14?
I don't know. They didn't give the whole list here. But
all right.
Congratulations to all of us at Stony Brook, I guess.
Well done.
Yeah, we should be celebrating.
Well done.
Yeah.
That's an achievement.
Speaking of New York State, private schools, including Jewish yeshivas, that fail to meet the state's minimum academic standards will be expected to start upgrading their instruction before December 1st. That's under new rules given final approval today by the state's Board of Regents. This latest overhaul of the state's 127-year-old compulsory education law gives non-public schools options. Either they take steps on their own to meet traditional standards, such as obtaining formal academic accreditation, or they can call on public boards of education to approve their coursework. This law was adopted in 1895. It requires all non-public schools to provide academic education substantially equivalent to that in the public sector, apart from any religious lessons those schools might choose to give. On Long Island and across the state, the vast majority of non-public schools already meet state requirements to provide academic instruction, according to New York education authorities and school representatives. There are more than 1,800 such schools statewide. However, a group of more than 30 Jewish yeshivas in Brooklyn and Rockland County have denounced the new rules as government overreach and have vowed to continue operating with or without the blessing or support of state leaders in Albany. Right. The protesting schools are sponsored by the Hasidic branch of Judaism, which is known for its religious conservatism and social seclusion. This is kind of weird to see this story, because it just seems like such a non-starter. You know, provide an education. Private school, you know, just teach the things that are important, that the state regents agrees are important things to have. Education officials have wrestled with the equivalency issue since 2015, when a group of former yeshiva students and their parents filed a lawsuit against four schools. The plaintiffs contended that the schooling of boys had focused so much on religion, taught mostly in Yiddish, that recipients never gained skills in English and calculation needed to function in modern society. These are big deals, you know? You can't just take people away and teach them your values and not teach them anything else, like, you know, history or math or science. These are requirements in our world today.
Think about it. They're like foreign speakers, like ESL, not even learning the second language, but they live their whole lives here in that community. Well, I mean, no exposure, no understanding of another language.
There's plenty of people who speak different languages as their primary language in this country.
No, and but learn that's fine, it from a early age.
Yeah, to wall yourself
all
off
language
from it.
Development. Uh-huh, that's no other languages, and that's it. And then you're an adult, and you're supposed to function somehow amongst anyone ever. You're set up to only be able to thrive within that.
The whole like government overreach thing. It just sounds so Trumpian. You know, and I do recall a section of that community is very pro-Trump. And that worries me because they are being used by the conservatives in this country then to basically, I can't imagine why. How does this benefit anybody?
I just get really skeptical of private schools and charter schools like this and like, you know, stuff that's the solution to not funding regular public education. Mm-hmm. And we found out you're not actually teaching to the regents and, you know, the normal stuff to meet the curriculum as any homeschooling and, you know, that kind of environment would expect to be meeting as well, or GED. You know, you have to meet certain standards to be called a school. Yeah. And it's just like, oh, yeah, you're making some incursion into our faith by the way
it's
our
got
school
nothing
exists
to do with
or
faith.
Doesn't.
Faith is not being attacked at all.
It just seems the emphasis isn't so much on education. It's on the
right.
The very narrow things that are being taught.
And that's fine, too, if you want to do that. But you got to, you know, provide an education as well, or allow for education to be provided. Simple as that. That's just one of the main parts of our society. Really, really kind of important. Speaking of nonsensical things done from conservative viewpoints, what is Lindsey Graham thinking? Today, he introduced legislation that would institute a federal ban on abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. So basically, he's saying that we Republicans are going to ban abortion nationwide. Oh, you know, okay, say that, Lindsey. Go ahead and say that. And you did. You've just riled up the Democrats like the Democrats couldn't do. And I think a lot of Republicans are probably kind of upset by this as well, because you said what they were thinking, but they weren't saying it out loud. You said it out loud. I mean, credit to you for actually doing it, but wow, what do you think is going to happen now? I'm asking Lindsey.
This is his playbook, like going lower. And yeah, thanks for the, I guess, the leak or heads up, because people are already royally upset about this.
Yeah. So in case you forgot, he's there to remind you that, yeah, this is on our agenda. This is what we're going to be pushing for. I've been watching the reaction today and people are just livid, you know, outraged that, you know, these people have the audacity to continue coming after women's rights. And they are a true threat. They are a true threat to freedom and to democracy and all of that.
It's like, wow, most of them are being subpoenaed, right?
Yeah, well, there's that. There's all kinds. Oh, my God. The whole thing with the judge and Trump. And, you know, if she rules in favor of him again, or basically tries and shut down this investigation against him for stealing classified documents, I don't think people are going to have much faith in the court system at all, because already it looks so bad. A Trump appointed judge basically allowing him to have a special master in an unprecedented case and telling the Justice Department to stop investigating. You don't tell the Justice Department to stop investigating, but she did. And now it's being appealed. But, you know, just that could delay the investigation months, maybe even longer. It's really harmful. It's really anti-democratic. We won't get to the bottom of what's going on. It looks like a cover-up. It looks like something we condemn in any other country.
I blame Florida.
Yeah, you should. She's a Florida judge. He's a Florida resident. And, it's scary. It's scary. And I guess we'll know more in the weeks ahead, because rulings are bound to come down.
Right. Yeah. This probably is remarkable that we're getting so much more information. My theory is it's got to wait till after November, and I think everybody's thinking that, not me. I mean, I'm just observing or picking out bits of things I'm getting in coverage. But yeah, it should be pretty interesting after a lot of the political stuff is settled, because they'll probably be quite busy in that interim between the holidays.
There was actually a viewpoint in the Seattle Times on September 9th by Noah Feldman, who concluded by saying, "The judge's order has already damaged the rule of law by suggesting that Trump appointees might do still more to protect the man who appointed them and who could promote them to better jobs if he's reelected. Trump himself was rightly and roundly criticized by Chief Justice John Roberts for slamming, quote, Obama judges, unquote. Orders like this one underscore why it's so important to have a judiciary that's deferential to precedent and reliably nonpartisan. And we do not have that right now. We have Trump judges. You know, we have judges that will rule with him, even if common sense says otherwise. And it's sad.
Judges with spouses who are political operatives.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Clarence Thomas's wife, the crazy thing she's into, and yet he's able to rule on those very issues and pretty much sides with her every time. That's just unbelievable that that's allowed.
I'm not down with that.
I don't think anybody is. I really don't. And it's just, to me, I don't get how this case wound up in a Trump judge's courtroom in the first place. If somebody is appointed by somebody and they are asked to rule on that same somebody's criminal future, they should recuse themselves, because obviously there is a relationship. Somebody gave you the damn job, right? And you might feel allegiance to them. You know, it's not an insult. It's just a fact. But our system doesn't allow for that. And when they appeal this, it could wind up in a court with more Trump judges. You know, so this system is so broken. We're talking about the monarchy being broken. Let's look to ourselves first. We're really broken. I mean, the monarchy doesn't really have that much power. Just a lot of pomp and circumstance. But here, I mean, some really bad things are happening. And more on the way if we don't do something. But some good things. Dispensaries are starting to get licensed, I think, and open in Suffolk County. There's talk of discreet cannabis sales happening out on the Shinnecock Reservation.
Really?
Well, they won't tell you where, but certain tobacco stores have regular customers. The Shinnecock Nation is not too thrilled about this because they want to do it officially, and these guys are kind of jumping the gun. But come on, we've been waiting so long. It's, you know, how long do we have to wait?
Well, they've got a really cool smoke shop area that has like a bunch of different smoke shops, and it would be probably mixed in with all of the other cannabis stuff that's been emerging. I mean, it's hard to imagine how far it's come in the last 5 or 10 years, and they're probably just getting ready, operating sort of in a gray area until things really take off. So yeah, it's going to take a little bit of a transition.
But meanwhile, in Babylon, there's going to be a meeting on September 21st. I believe that's a Wednesday. I believe it's at 7 p.m. because everything is at 7 p.m. on Wednesdays. It's going to be a public hearing on the proposed law for recreational marijuana, micro business, consumption sites, and dispensaries. They're one of the few towns that opted in. Babylon, Southampton, Brookhaven, and I believe Riverhead are the four towns on Long Island, not just in Suffolk County, because all of Nassau County opted out. That will change. Trust me, that will change. But right now, that's all it is. So what they're doing in Babylon is they're basically coming up with all these rules about where you can put dispensaries. Right now, the proposal is to prohibit them from operating within a 1,000-foot radius of a residential area. They also would not be permitted within a 200-foot radius of religious properties or within a 500-foot radius of K-12 education facilities, libraries, parks, playgrounds, child care centers, youth organizations, dance studios, batting cages, gymnasiums, or other venues where minors congregate. In addition, marijuana businesses could not operate within a 500-foot radius of the lot line of another such business. Okay, my question here is why in God's name aren't these regulations in place for bars, you know, where all kinds of nefarious behavior takes place. But for some reason, you have to have all these restrictions. Are there even any spaces in Babylon that fit these criteria? I don't know, but it just seems like overkill. Look, when you have a dispensary, we went to one in Chicago. It's in the middle of the city. You walk in, there's a guy there, make sure nobody under 21 gets in. It's all professionally run. It's all secured. And there are no minors allowed anywhere near the place. And there is no bad behavior. People go in there, buy what they want to buy, and they leave, as opposed to a bar where people stay. This is silly.
Well, it's about how you design it, too, because bars have separations. They do not allow, like, underage people to be a part of the dining area or the bar area. They, post have signage and stuff. It's all about how you design it. And, like, the location you're talking about had one-way entrance, had separation and handoffs of what you purchase, and that is an important part of integrating it into any location.
Well, we have to go. And we have to stand. OTW@2600.com is our email address. Stay tuned for Finn. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Bye.
Bless this country and see us through.